Now we have the discussion on Lecture 13, Who is in Charge of My Inner Genius? There is a universe in which I live, which I can conceive. There is a universe in which I live, which is inconceivable to me as a human. And what sort of universe are we talking about? What sort of universe do you think of for yourself? What sort of universe is important to you? Did you come up with any questions of our talk, or did you just feel that I was giving you a hard time? Do you feel that you have the capacity to be a genius, or do you feel that you already are a genius? Oh, you have a question, huh?
Yeah, listen.
Good for you, okay. Thank you. Do you have the capacity to be a genius that you are already? Why are you not living your genius capacity? Many people are. If you read the entrepreneurial magazine in the United States, or read Discovery magazine or Business Week, you'll be reading about young people who are, as we said, 10 to 14 years of age, or 15 or 16, somewhere in there, and they're coming up with beautiful things. Things that we worked on when we were kids in our basement or the attic, and things that nobody thought a thing about. But the knowledge was always there. The ability was always there, and we just didn't carry it through. Now, how did the entrepreneurial kids have a chance to carry it through today? They have what's called the internet. They can go on the internet and on Wikipedia, which is the university and definition of the internet, to get any subject they want, any topic they want, and get it in depth, and get it from people who are thinking about it today. And so they're working on projects that their fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents, none of them have the answer for them. None of them have the answer because they're not interested. So these kids who are interested go into the internet and they find the answer for themselves. And then also they find other kids, like on Facebook, they find other kids who are also interested in what they're interested in. There are so many things on the internet now, so many YouTube activities, so many things that are going on, telling about what's going on in the world, and these kids are interacting with one another. Sometimes the interaction is not good, but most of the time it's very good. And you look at all of the major new companies that are out right now, the new companies, and the kids are almost all under 18 who are owning it and running it. Under 18. Where did we miss out? And they're multi-billionaires, not just millionaires. And then they take their company after they develop it and come up with some beautiful idea, and they sell it to some company for buku money, great amounts of money. And then they go on and develop new ideas. They're just into the idea of being creative. They are artists in their field. They're magic people in their field. Okay, let's see what Mr. Dyke has to suggest to us here. Okay, question. Is it good for anybody to accept any fulfillment that, now, you mean he or you, experience as the best, and do you reject them and still search for what you think is the best? It's just a little confusing. Did you want to define it a little more? Is it good for anybody to accept any fulfillment? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Okay. For anyone to accept any fulfillment that they experience,
yes,
as their best, or do you, meaning me, do you reject them and still search, or do they reject whatever is considered their best and reject that and go on to search for what they think is the best? Now, who's doing this thinking? I mean, it really doesn't matter. What is your question trying to ask?
Whatever comes to you.
Okay, if you come to me, that's fine. That's very clear.
Whatever comes to you is the best. Your fulfillment, your achievement. If my achievement to me is the best, do I just accept it?
Now,
as
just
the
a minute.
Best?
Let's play it cool. You come to me with your idea of a deal, of a fulfillment, okay. And it, in your mind, is the best thing that you have ever come up with.
Okay.
Right? And you then go on from there. What's the next step?
The next step is or do you reject...
Not or. The next step is something. I haven't even thought about it yet. I haven't seen the idea.
My question is...
You've come to me with some beautiful idea,
yes.
And you presented it to me.
Yes.
And I looked at it, and I say to you, this is a lot of bother. It's not going to get you any place. Or I say to you, wow, go for it. You're wonderful. Now, what answer do you want?
And what I'm trying to say is that if that fulfillment, if you feel is not the best, do you reject it and go for another one?
If I feel what you're doing is not the best, do I reject it and go for another one? Well, I'm not even involved. Or if you feel what you're doing is not the best, do you reject it and go to another one?
Okay.
I mean, I have to know who's on first base here, you know. So now, okay. I say to you, if you ask such a question, you're not interested in the answer. Because if you came to me with your dream, and I were so insensitive of your dream, I would say to you, forget it. And then you forgot it. And then somebody else came up with that same dream and accomplished it and did very well with it. And then you say, well, a lot of good your advice was, you know. Now, what are you really saying? Are you saying that you want to follow your goal and your dream, and many times your family disagrees with you, many times your friends disagree with you, many times people disagree with your judgment as to how valid your dream is? And so, should you follow it, or should you follow what they have to say? No?
I should follow my own heart.
Always. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say. And now, what else do we want to say about this?
There's nothing else.
No, there's nothing else.
I want to know whether it is good to drop and move into another world.
All right. What did... should it be do? He came up with a battery that was very small to operate that filament, and it functioned. Everybody else had power lines, all quite different and yet very beautiful and powerful and good, all sincere, very sincere about it. But he, in his childishness and his ignorance and his unawareness that this just isn't going to work that way, and it works. You see, you cannot tell a person they should not do something because it doesn't work, because it does work.
Okay.
It does.
That's my emphasis.
Okay, that's your question.
My emphasis is to be firm. The answer I wanted is for the person to be firm, for me to be firm on that thing which I believe.
Yes.
For you to be firm?
Firm on the thing which I believe.
For you to stay on your belief?
On my belief, yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I would never advise you to stay on your belief. I would merely say to you at all times, follow your heart, because you are a very dynamic person, and one minute you think one direction, and next minute you think another. You have so many beautiful ideas that flow through your mind, and you try out as many of them as you can. And most of them, you don't try out with all your sincerity, and you don't try it out to the ultimate end. Then you get tired of it, and so you drop it. And you think that it's no good. And then you go on to the next idea, and the next idea, and the next. One of these days you're going to strike an idea that happens to work while you're thinking about it. But, you know, this is what people do. People do not realize that they're still the same, even if they come up with great ideas. If your mom and your dad, your world, taught you to follow your dream, but follow it with all your heart, not allow anything to distract you, not even new dreams to distract you. If you have a dream that you believe in, follow it. Whether you have new ideas that come along and want to take you away, don't do it. I don't say don't do it, but I'm saying that's what they should tell you. They should say to you, follow your dream with all your heart and soul and being, and follow it and watch it manifest. But if you go from one dream to another, one possibility to another, you may never accomplish anything, and that's okay too. There are a lot of people who are thought travelers. They're traveling from one thought to another. And, hey, that's not bad. But the thing is, if you're going to paint a fence and you stop halfway through it and start going and doing something else, the fence will never get painted. Now, the fence does not have to be painted. The job you did, the thought that you had, did not have to be manifest. But if it is manifest, then you might be a very successful man. And also, if it's manifest, it might make people think you're a clown. You know, it could be anything. So if you believe in yourself, follow it. Wherever it takes you. And if you decide to change at any point, don't change because. Change while you have a new interest, you follow your new interest. But if you change because you're no longer interested, or because it's shown that it doesn't function, or because that's not the reason, it might function just after you let go of it. You know. So just always follow your heart and do what your heart tells you, and stay with it for as long as you can and feel good about it.
Yes,
my love. When putting a course cause in motion, I find it difficult to completely remove doubt. What do I do about it? Mary thinks that she's an unusual person. Everyone who puts a cause in motion doubts it from time to time. They doubt whether it's going to work or whether it's right or whether they're doing the right thing. Everyone doubts that. Now, does it matter if you doubt it? It matters only to the success and failure of your course, of your cause. If you doubt something, you're not going to apply yourself to it diligently to accomplish it. That's all. You're just not going to apply yourself. It's like you didn't even go into it. If you do the opposite, if you have confidence in yourself, and if you have confidence in what you want to do, you will work on it and do it, even if it is not going to be your highest, your best, and most fun, but you will accomplish it. To accomplish anything in life means that we put a cause in motion and we stick with it. Now, sticking with it doesn't mean you do what it says. If you think that you're going to write a new book, and you're going to write a book on etiquette, and on where you should put your knives and your forks on one side of the table or another, and whether you're in one nation that does it one way or another nation does it another way, how you're going to set the table. And then a friend comes along and says, you know, over in Thailand they do it this way, and over in China they do it this way, and in Japan they do it this way, and in Germany they do it this way, and in America anything goes. So what are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, I'm going to write a book, and in the book, I'm going to write about every culture, and that every culture does it this way, that way, and the reasons that they do it. Now, what an interesting book that would be. Instead of just a book on how we in Nigeria should set our table, how we should use our knives and forks, and how we should have our dishes, and how we should have our glasses, and our cup of coffee, and whatever we have. And that's good. But the readership in Nigeria would be much smaller than the readership of something that covered a greater span of space like the world. So I know that probably doesn't answer your question, but you say, when putting a cause in motion, I find it difficult to completely remove doubt. What do I do? Well, that you could even remove a little bit of doubt is pretty good. But when you put a cause in motion, you say to yourself, I believe in me, and I believe in my cause. And then go carry it out. And should any doubts come up, you say, get thee behind me, Satan. Get thee behind me. So your family comes up and says, Mary, you think that you can have a bridal shop in Nigeria? There's not enough people getting married in Nigeria to have a bridal shop. And you say, oh, yes, there is. Oh, yes, there. You don't know them because you're not in that circle. And I haven't seen them much because I'm not in that circle, but I like that circle. And people get married in Nigeria, and there's plenty of room for a bridal shop. In fact, there's even a room for a tuxedo shop. Tuxedos in Nigeria? Are you lost your head? No, not at all. We love to dress up in Nigeria, just like people love to dress up in America, like they love to dress up anywhere in the world. And so I am catering to their love to dress up. So I am taking my idea, and I'm putting my idea, don't you tell me I can't do it. Don't you tell me it won't work. Don't you tell me. You may be right, but don't you tell me. Because I want to test it. I want to do it for myself. And so you just go out and you do it for yourself and you carry it out and surprise yourself at how well you do it. But if you do anything, anybody, if you do anything, give it your very best. Give it the finest attention and talent that you have because you want to like yourself when you're done. When it fails, you want to be able to say, I gave it my best. And when it succeeds, you want to say, I've only begun. I've only begun to give it all the good that I am. And I can assure you, with that attitude, you will have success more often than failure, and you will have success where oftentimes others have failure, but you won't. Because you believe in yourself and you believe in your ability to do whatever you want to do. And the doubt, chuck, goes away because it doesn't have a leg to stand on. They have pictures of dogs in America. And the dog was run over. And so its back legs were cut off. And so the dog wanted to get around. So its owner built a little cart to put its hind end in the cart. And they put a leash, not a leash, they tied it down on the cart. And so the dog is running around with its four legs and two wheels running behind it, and it's very happy as can be. It doesn't know anything is wrong. It doesn't know anything is right. It just is, it is not bothered. It just is doing its thing and happy. Now you say, that poor dog, that poor dog. No. The poor dog is the dog that lies down and does nothing. The dog that gets up and does something, even if he has to drag his rear end around in a little cart. How fantastic. Another dog lost its forelegs. It lost its forelegs. And so its mistress loved it so, she taught it to walk on its hind legs. And so that dog now is going all over the world walking on its hind legs, showing off how wonderful it is walking on its hind legs and doing something, and it is just as happy as can be. It is admired, it is loved, it is appreciated. And you see, it's not a matter what we do, but what we do with what we do. What do with what you do? Do you have a mind that is never stopping from brilliant ideas? And you do. Do you have inside of you all sorts of imagination at once? Yeah, this, your gatekeeper's wife, well, she was out here chasing something around the yard, and I thought, is that a kitten? Is that a cat? And so I waited for a moment to look. And then pretty soon she chased it through the opening. And there was a rooster. You know, it was a chicken. And I thought, oh, okay. No cat today. But I thoroughly expected, wow, they got a cat. They have a cat and they didn't eat him. You know, how fantastic. Well, okay. That's great. But what difference does it make? None. It only means that Such little things can make me happy. Such little things can delight me. And let these things delight you, because you're worth it. You're worth anything. And Mary, you are a genius. You are intelligent. But you have one area where you need to work. And that is, what is it? What is it? What is it?
Me.
Huh?
Me.
I like me, Mary. I like me. And your children love you because you just dote on them and you love them. Your husband loves you because you dote on him and love him. Your world loves you because you are so lovable and so doting on the world. Now, you put the best love in the world together and start liking yourself, saying, I like me, and you watch how every opportunity in the world for success in your world, in your business, in your life, in your family, in your marriage, will all shower you. Your husband will have the finest job in the world that will make him feel very wealthy and happy, and he will come home proud every day. Your children will go out and do wonderful things, and at early ages, they won't necessarily leave home, but at early ages they will establish what sort of things they want to do in school, and you will have the wherewithal to send them to school. You'll have the money to send them to whatever school is going to sort of encourage the genius that lay within them. And that's wonderful. But most of all, you will be you, and you'll say, I like me. And when you say, I like me, the world is your oyster. Anything you want to do, you can do. And you do it. Now, is that what you want? And I would think that's what you want. That's what we all want. I would think that's what you want because that's what we all want. I would think that's what you want because that's what we all want. What are you saying repeatedly, Herb? Well, I'm saying it repeatedly because that's what we all want. And we don't say, I like me, to ourselves, and therefore we don't get the results. What we do say is, I'm a dum-dum, I'm so stupid, I wish I were as smart as my sister, I wish I was as smart as my brother, I wish I was as smart as my husband or wife, I wish I was as good as somebody else in the world. No, you don't. Nobody else in the world has within them who you are, how wonderful you are, how magical you are, what great talent you have. And you do. You do. Ella Barbara here is such a unique man. He's such a unique man. He looks like he's probably about 22, maybe 30, and he walks around here with such energy. He talks with such dignity. He speaks with such clarity and such wisdom. He acts on everything he does as the man of destiny, the man of power, the man who can do anything. Now, you say, boy, Herb, how much did he pay you to say that about him? Well, I say that about all of you. All of you. If Chitterby?
Yes?
If Chitterby would go every hour before we begin our talk and have all of you sitting down and would write on the note, Peter, Chitterby, and all the names of you in the room, in the circle, then I would take that and I would use your names when I talk to you. And I would know it, and if I, then Chitterby is so intelligent, he would write your name, and then he'd write the phonetic sounding of your name so I could speak it, not dialectic sounding, but phonetic sounding. And that's from English phonetics. And wow, would he be brilliant, and would I be blessed to have all of your names right in front of me so I can say, okay, you're fantastic. Okay, you're marvelous. Okay, you're super. And okay's not even here. But you are. And you are the magic people in my world. You are the magic people in your world. And some of you are going to school. Some of you are going to high school, lower school. Some of you are going to college. Some of you are planning on going here and there. Well, I tell you, you're not going to be any good. You're not going to succeed. You will not succeed until you start saying every single moment that you can, I like me, I like me, I like me. That's all it takes. You don't have to say why or how or any, but I like me. And when you say I like me, you open yourself up to the magic of your soul. You open yourself up to the genius that's within you. We've been talking about that. Who is in charge of my inner genius? Who's in charge of your inner genius? Me. That's right, you. You're in charge of your inner genius. And your success depends on that. Now, a lot of you have been working on the courses of the University of Healing, and you've done very well. And some of you have been very sloppy. The lights went off. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. You can go on again now. But the lights go off in us when we don't carry through on what we start. It's not that it's right or wrong. Carry through and finish it. And as you carry through and finish it, all of the magic of the program is yours. I have been in the business now since the 70s, actually since 48, and I've been working with students around the world all my life. And as I work with people, and I show them the program, and I show them the path, they all say, oh, I love what you're teaching, I love what you're saying, I love what you're telling me, I want to do it, I want to do it, I want to do it. Tell me more, tell me. I say, read the books, take the course, do what it says, and thank you. And then it's all going, it's all fantastic, it's all glorious. But then a period of 20 years, you know, it's about your age, 18, 20, what have you. 20 years go by. And then they write a letter and they say, I haven't heard from you. They haven't heard from us. And, oh, thank you, love. They haven't heard from us. And so I say, what are you going to do? Are you going to start the course again? I don't say that. They write in their letter, Dear Dr. Barley, I think I'm ready to go on with the course now. I finished the first lesson of the Art and Science of Wholeness 20 years ago, and it was all I could take. And since that time, my life has just become more and more wonderful. Now I'd like to make my life even more wonderful, and I'd like to continue the course. Can I continue the course under the same routine that I took it 20 years ago? Under the same tuition charge that I did then? And I say, well, show me how sincere you are, and we'll talk money later. And so they show me how sincere they are. And they come back like magic people. They come back like people who have just found heaven themselves. And they're starting to take the program which teaches them about themselves. And they're doing beautifully in the process. Now, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. This is what you're all about. If you take the courses, super. If you don't take the courses, super. Should we hear? He's not taking the course. But you know what he's doing? He's living what we're teaching. He's living what you and I are sharing here. And he knows the answers. Now, whether he always says the answer or not, that's another thing. But he knows them. And as he goes through his schoolwork, he'll be a success. He'll be a success because he knows that I like me. He knows I am good. He knows that I am fantastic. And his mother knows it too. She hasn't taken the courses, but we've worked with her regardless that she hasn't taken the courses. And what has happened to her? She went from one glorious experience to another, and she is opening new doors for herself to achieve all her goals. And what about you? What are you doing? Now, what are you doing? What are you doing? I should pull up your slip here and look at your name, Emmanuel. What are you doing, Emmanuel? And don't answer me. What are you doing with your life? Is Emmanuel saying to himself, I am wealthy, I am happy, I'm healthy, I am surrounded by beautiful people, I have the most wonderful family in the world, I have the wonderful, most wonderful job in the world. I'm content in every way. Does he say that of himself? Or does Emmanuel say of himself, I would like, I want. What does he say? Now, don't answer it for him. That's not nice. But what does he say? If he says, I am unconditional love, I am happy, healthy, wealthy, successful, I am, it is done. Then he has learned the lessons in the courses that he's taken. If he says, rather, I want, I would like, that's my dream, oh, my goal is, oh, my children are perfect, my wife is fantastic, my house is glorious. He's wanting something. But when he likes himself, he does not want anything. What does he do? He has it. It's already his, and he's living it and enjoying it right now. And that makes the difference. Now, what are you doing? What are you doing? Do you want to play the game? Good. Then play the game by realizing that I'm not getting after you for anything. I'm merely saying, play the game. I'm merely saying, what are your words supposed to be, Peter? What are your words supposed to be? Well, I give you the clue. I like me. Peter?
I like me.
No, thank you, sir. Now, can the devil keep you from saying, I like me?
No.
Oh, no. Can an angel keep you from saying, I like me?
No.
Because an angel is so good, you could never be an angel. Yes. No. Because you're not living your life by comparison. You're living your life by the reality of who you are. Are you the ideal father?
Yes.
Oh, how easy he says that, huh? I wonder what his children and wife say. Do you have the ideal wife?
Yes.
No change in attitude at all here. Do you have ideal children?
Yes.
Are they all geniuses?
Yes.
Are you a genius?
Yes.
See, no doubt about it. He knows who he is. Now, do you have a lovely home?
Yes.
Do you have lots of visitors who come over and delight in your home with you?
Yes.
Yes, you got it right there, and I didn't even think you were going to get that one. Now, are you the most respected, revered, noble man in your community?
Sure enough, yes.
Yes, yes, sure enough, yes, yes. He's trying to ad lib here with that sure enough, you know. But yes, that's right. Now, will you always be that way?
Yes.
No. Will you always be that way? I am that way. There is no always. I am that way. There is no tomorrow. I am that way in the all, in the allness.
You see,
and we want to be real careful. People are going to throw zingers at us and try to get us distracted. They're going to try to get us to think that we're not something that we are. And they're going to try to say, you say you're God? What sort of a sacrilegious person are you? My goodness sake. And you say, well, aren't you God? Is there anything else in this world but God? How can I be anything but God when God is all there is? Well, see, when you face them with love, you take away all the vituperation, all the venom, all the unhappiness they have with themselves. Because they too would like to say they're God publicly, but they haven't the courage to do it, because to do it means that there are some people that may disagree with them. If Mr. Dyke, if Stanislaus Dyke went to his new boss, and he said to the new boss, hey, Gov, I'm God. The new boss might say to him, all right, now what does that mean? Are you, as God, going to make me a successful governor? Are you, as God, going to make me the happiest man on earth? Are you, as God, going to bless me with a wonderful wife and a wonderful children that I already have? Are you, as, you know, And so if he has any intelligence or guts, what will he say to them? No. And the governor will say to him, well, why do I need you? And he'll say to the governor, well, you bless yourself. You say, I like me. You say, you are God. And when you say you are God, everything that being God means is done in you and your world and your life. And Nigeria and Owerri and all of the points north and south are exactly what you paint them to be, the ideal community in an ideal world, and you are the head of it. I'm very proud of you. Now, you see, can he take offense at that?
No.
Do you have the courage to say something like that to him? Perhaps not yet, because you haven't finished working on yourself. But once you get really confident in doing it yourself, where you're not trying to say, you're God, you know, and like that's a threat, and you don't want to threaten yourself or anybody else. You want to just be that. When we were children, we had a summer home out in the country, and it was a lake cottage, and you are in the lake from the front of our cottage here. It was that close. And so when we'd come out from the city, which is 30 miles away, oh, so far away, and we'd come out from the city, and we'd have our trailer loaded with goods and stuff for the weekend or for the summer, and we wouldn't unload the trailer. My dad would say, okay, kids, unload the trailer. And we'd strip off our clothes and jump into our swim sunk and into the lake. Because we were so eager, so happy to be there. It was paradise. And it's paradise as I think of it now. It was paradise. Why was it paradise? Because we were free spirits. We were delightful. We were fantastic. We enjoyed every moment of it. And everyone who came into our world was a friend. No matter what that person or what that animal was, they were a friend. And we created them as wonderful. We knew that all was God. We knew that all was good. We knew that all was beautiful. We had come up under the unity teachings, and we realized that God was everywhere and God was good. But that didn't bother us. We just practiced it. We lived it. We had fun doing it. But it was such a wonderful experience that summer vacation comes and we zipped out to the lake to go sitting in the lake and playing in the lake. We'd go into the lake first thing in the morning after breakfast, right after breakfast, and get out of the lake for lunch and go back in the lake and come out of the lake for supper and go back in the lake until the moon came out, or mother came out, whichever goes first, and said, into bed, time to go to bed now. We had paradise. Now, is that paradise still existing right here in my heart, in my being? Yes. When you have paradise, whatever it may be, it certainly isn't mine. We all have different paradises. When you have your paradise and you live there, and you carry that with you always, that's called your charisma that everybody sees and everybody knows and everybody says, you are fantastic, you are glorious, you are marvelous, you are good, you are unbelievable, you are special, special, special in every way. Now, are you that way? Do you like yourself?
Yes.
You bet. You bet. And are you too young or too old ever to say that? No. You teach it to the little babies in the crib, and you say, I like me, I like me, I like me. Teach them to say it. Goo, 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 goo. No, 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 I like me, I like me, I like me. You know, ah, yeah, 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 yeah. No, no, I like me, I like me, I like me. Don't say no. Just say, I like me, I like me. Make I like me, I like me, I like me be the first words they hear. And if that's the first words they hear, it'll be the only words that mean anything to them. And you have created their world as spectacular and beautiful and wonderful and marvelous and joyful, just like yours. Nice idea, huh?
Yes.
You're fantastic. Any other comments or questions? Did you raise your hand and you're ready to run over here with it? Come on, that's good. I accept. Wonderful. Okay, thank you. Okay. Akin, see, I'm looking at my list here so I can say your name now properly. Akin, A-K-I-N, A-K-I-N, A-K-I-N. He has written to us and he said, what is the role of the environment in assisting to release the inner genius? What is the role of the environment? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, what is the role of the environment?
What is the role of the environment in assisting to release the inner genius?
Yes.
The environment does not release the inner genius. The environment does not release the inner genius. We'll say that several times. The environment is a reflection of what?
Yes.
Who that inner genius is. And if you have lousy weather, that's your inner genius having trouble. If you have 4th of July sparks going on everywhere, that's your inner genius with trouble. If you have wars and problems, that's your inner genius. If you have peace on earth, and it began with you, of course, that's your inner genius. If you have love between nations, between peoples, that's your inner genius. If you see every man, woman, and child saying of themselves, I like me, that's your inner genius. Your inner genius reflects in your environment and shows you exactly what it is. Now, the people of America, they think that it's terrible how the hurricanes and the earthquakes and the tornadoes and the tidal waves that come up in the south there from the Caribbean and all these things, how terrible they are, how terrible they are. Oh, how terrible they are. Hey, they're not terrible. It's a reflection of what's going on among the people in those areas in America. Simple, but true. Those people have anxiety. Those people are afraid, silly, because the last tidal wave that came in caused billions of dollars of damage. And they're so anxious about it. Well, now, that was 2 years ago at least. And when that damage happened, it was not nice. People were killed, houses were ruined, things were destroyed. But this was their choice. You say, Herb, that is very cold. No, that's what it is. If your little baby grows up to always having problems, that's your fault. That's what you created in him. If your little kid goes out in the yard and all the other kids chase him around and try to threaten him and try to control him and manipulate him, that's your decision. All you have to do is be the peacemaker once. You take all the children and you gather them together, and they're the ones who are chasing after the one kid trying to give him a hard time. And you say to the children, okay, what shall we do this afternoon? Stop whatever you're doing, it's not important, and do what is right for them. The house is dirty, this or that, it doesn't matter. It's what's going on in the lives of those kids. And so you're talking to them. While you're talking to them, they're picking on this kid and give them a hard time. And so you, gently, you just say, okay, Peter, the kid is Peter apparently, Peter, go in the house and bring us all some ice cream. And so Peter goes in the house, and you've got a bunch of frozen cups of ice cream in the refrigerator, and Peter brings it out, and Peter said, okay, here it is. And he says, Mom, let me take mine last, just to make sure everybody gets some. Well, now, Peter and Mom had talked about that ahead of time. And so Peter said that, and he said that in love to the group. Now, what did the group think of Peter for saying that? They say, hey, that kid is okay. And then he goes around and he passes out the ice cream. And there is one short, and he doesn't get it. And he says, that's okay, that's okay. I had the privilege of handing it all out to you. I'm just so happy. And the rest of the kids say, how can he be happy handing it out to us and not getting one himself? And so what do, the kids? The girls especially. You know, girls are like this. The girls say, Peter, please take my ice cream. I'm sure you'd enjoy it much more than I would. And Peter says, okay, thank you. And then Peter's eating that bowl of ice cream. And then the next girl comes along and says, Peter, I would like it if you'd eat my ice cream too, because it's just going to melt and it's going to not be good. Would you mind eating it? Peter says, oh, sure. And by the time Peter's done, three or four of the girls have come up and offered their ice cream, and one or two of the boys. And Peter says, wow, oh, I am so full. And you see, what Peter is doing, he's playing along with his mother's game. And his mother's game is the game of peace. And she is putting the causes in motion that she knows is going to bring certain results. And it brings those results. Now, Peter doesn't lose by that. But Peter has been being picked on by his brothers and sisters and the neighbor kids for the longest time. And the obvious reason is not that he deserves to be picked on, but Peter is a very humble child, a very gentle child, a very giving child, always wanting to give whatever he has to anybody else. Not because he has to, but because he wants to. And so in this meeting, in this gathering of the kids, they see that Peter does what his mother does, and that Peter does enjoy it. He does eat it, and he does overeat it. He ate too many of the ice creams that he got a tummy ache. But they have gained a new respect for Peter, a new understanding. And the war that had been going on with the family and the rest of the neighbors of knock down Peter, bump into Peter, push Peter around, make Peter unhappy, stop being. Because Peter now is shown as a different type of person. He is shown as a modest, humble, sensitive, caring guy who gets a bad rep merely because they didn't understand. Peace on earth begins with us. The hurricanes, the tornadoes, the volcanoes, they begin with us. People in California are an example of idiots that are most interesting. They have lots of money. And so they want to build a lovely home. And so they say, we're building our home on the edge of this cliff overlooking the ocean. Oh, it's so beautiful. The cliff has been there for years. And the Environmental Association and the soil people say, that's not too wise. A little tremble of the earthquake, we haven't had one for a long time, but we might have one, or a little bit of the ocean undermining something there, or the tectonic plates moving around down there, even just a fraction of an inch, and they move, could make your house fall right into the ocean. And so you drive up Santa Monica Bay, you drive up the area, and you look up there, and what do you see? Houses with swimming pools hanging out over nothing. They're concrete, and they're built so they, you know, cling to the land yet, but nobody's going to swim in that unstable pool. But the thing is, their house is half gone. Now, there's no putting dirt underneath that house. There's no picking up that house and carrying it away, because the minute they make the house loose on this end, it'll tilt right in, fall into the ditch. Now, why do people do that? Because they think they are above the principle. They're above the law. They don't have to use it. They think that they can go out and do whatever they want to do, and they do it, and they pay the penalty. And they pay the penalty of the volcanoes, they pay the penalty of the tornadoes, they pay the penalty of too much rain, of the floods. Oh, there are lots of it in lots of areas. And what is the area that has the most problems in America? It's an area called the redneck belt. Redneck. You know what a redneck is? A redneck is a person that feels that he's better than anybody else. You're a Jew, you're nothing, you know. You're a Christian, you're nothing. You know. Now, we don't want you around here. You're different than we are. This is our neighborhood. You don't come into our neighborhood. This is for us only. This is for us Christians, and we don't want people who come in here from different religious organizations, different understanding. We don't want that. And of course, they have no right to do that. But they put up a good front, and they put up so much negativity that their land is flooded. They put up so much negativity that the ocean comes in and tries to undermine their homes and tear them away, and does. And they say, "Herb, oh my goodness, what if people hear you saying this?" It's true. It's true. It's true. Wherever hatred dwells, unhappiness of the environment, of the landscape, dwells. Wherever hatred is, the world falls apart. Truly. Now, you and I, we have a privilege of not empowering those rednecks, those people who are creating negativity in their environment. We have the power to say, "I surround this world with my pure white light of love, and all is in divine order." Now, does the tectonic plate beneath the earth shift from time to time? Yes. Yes, it shifts. It's a constantly shifting activity under the earth. Now, it takes millions, billions of years for the shift to be significant to make it affect any area. And many generations of people come and go during that time. And it does not affect you. Do you know? Sometime in the distant future, the sun is going to run out of electricity. It's going to run out of power. It's going to run out of energy, and we will have no sun. And what's going to happen? Well, long before the sun is running out of power, many changes will have been made. We will choose a different solar system. We'll choose a different life. We can right now speak our word and say all is in divine order on earth. We can right now say all is peace and have peace be there. We can right now put the cause in motion for our world to be a beautiful world. But if you ever spend any time with your nose in your neighbor's business, you can be sure you're going to have very little power in your word to bring peace on earth, because you have put your nose out of joint in other people's business, telling them what they can and shouldn't do. It's something fantastic. Well, my beloveds, we are quite something, and I get to wandering away here with answering your questions and talking. And you might think that I'm speaking in a negative vein, but I'm saying to you, if you say, "I like me," if you say, as the farmer did — we never did finish our story about the farmer who had the rain. He had the rain, and he grew the crops. And his neighbors said, "Well, have it rain over my area." And he said to them, "I can only do it for myself. I can only speak my word for myself because I believe it. And if you don't believe it and it doesn't happen, you'll say I didn't do it for you." So you, with belief in your heart that it works, speak your word and it'll happen for you. Well, needless to say, none of the others accomplished that, because none of the others were able to dream like this man did. None of the others were able to conceive like this man did, that the rain fell where he wanted it. I've got a lot more stories about that, which would be interesting to follow sometime. But right now, let's prepare ourselves for getting ready for lunch and having peace on earth and a happy time in our hearts. And we'll join together again at 2 for a wonderful continuation of our topic. And I will have the list of names of all of you, and I'll refer to them more completely. And I will say Peter, and I will say Chittaby, and I'll say Albert, and I'll say Mary, and I'll say Ugo. That's you, right? That's a beautiful name, Ugo. And Ify, I-F-Y, right? That's you?
Yes.
Where'd you get such a beautiful name, Ify? Somebody must have loved you very much. And then there's Akin, A-K-I-N. No, you say Akin or Akin?
Akin.
I'm sorry?
Akin.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
No, not yes. Say it loud so I can hear you.
Akin.
Akin. I think that's better than Akin, too, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, Akin is better than Akin. So, Mr. Akin, Mr. Wonderful Akin. Okay, now, Emmanuel.
Yes.
My, what a traditional name that is. How functional and how beautiful. And Mr. Dyke?
Yes.
You have that Dyke on here.
Yes.
Now, what do your friends call you? Dyke? Hey, Dyke, come over here. Hey, Dyke, do this. Do they say it?
Dyke.
Huh?
Dyke.
They call you Stanislaus? Hey, Stanislaus, come here.
Stanislaus Dyke.
They don't say Stanislaus Dyke. You don't say Herb Byerly to me. You say Herb. You don't say...
Some say Dyke, Stanislaus. Some say Stanislaus.
You're trying to get me to say your name in your dialect. And that's okay. Okay. And the next man is one of the most famous people on the face of the earth, Enoch. Right?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Enoch. And that's our master genius at the minute. And next to him is... Dina or Dinah?
Dinah.
Say it out loud.
Dinah.
Okay. And then there is Nagumi. Naomi. Naomi. You see, your A and your O look a bunch alike here, and I'm working on it. And then there's Mr. Luck.
Yes.
Luck. Lucky.
Lucky.
Mr. Lucky.
Yes.
Mr. Man of All Seasons, who always wins and is always fantastic. Hey. Yeah. And then there is Shaka.
Yes.
Shaka?
Shaka.
Is that close?
Yes.
Shaka. Mr. Shaka. Or?
Right.
Israel, is it? No. Is it?
Ilawa.
Huh?
Ilawa. Mr. Ilawa.
What? Shaka. Shaka, yeah.
Yes.
S-H-I-A-K-A.
Yes.
And then, to end it all up, at the bottom here, what upholds the whole cake, is Her Ladyship, Sybil. And, of course, I'm Herb. So, prepare yourself for a lovely... lunch, prepare yourself for a lovely mid-afternoon, and at 2 we'll join together. And please, if you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, write them down so we can answer them, because answering them is interesting sometimes, isn't it? We come up with things that we might not think of otherwise. So, I love you.